Hello, Zimbabwe, and welcome to Live Talk, The Connection, a platform where we discuss issues affecting young people. We are coming to you live from Studio 7 at the Voice of America in Washington. I am your host, Thabo Kancube. On Live Talk, we are discussing the state of education in Zimbabwe at a time when state university lecturers are threatening to go on strike. But first, a look at what is happening in other parts of the world. U.S. election authorities say they are confident that they will be able to fend off any security threats to the November presidential vote. In Alexandria, Virginia, VOA's Veronica Apalderas Iglesias sat in on a training for election officers, one of several measures to ensure a free, fair, and transparent vote.
Last month, top U.S. officials told Congress the U.S. presidential election will be fair and secure thanks to tightening safeguards and increasing cooperation between federal, state, and local authorities.
From cyber threats, from physical threats, from operational risks, and from foreign malign influence. One thing to note that it's the diversity and decentralization of our election infrastructure because it's managed by state, by 8,800 separate jurisdictions around the country, that heterogeneity gives it resilience.
In the city of Alexandria, Virginia, for example, ballot scanners are not connected to the internet, thus making the process more secure against hacking attempts.
Additionally, we test the scanners prior to every election through a very intense logic and accuracy test to ensure that they are programmed properly.
To ensure a transparent process, the city is training up to 500 election officers for the primaries and November election. They are learning about what the voting requirements are, as well as how to operate the ballot scanners and certify the results of the precinct.
How many people have checked in? How many, ballots have gone through the machine? And it's happening all day long, and different people are doing it. We rotate positions. So there's no way that you're going to have an entire team of people coordinated in order to do anything shady at all.
Given the polarized political environment and potential threats, election officer Mark Dyer and others are also learning the escalation techniques.
Maybe once in a blue moon, there'll be someone who is belligerent or, is having a bad day, a voter. Yeah. But most of the time, it's been a pleasant experience.
Analysts interviewed by VOA also expect that overall, the upcoming presidential election will run smoothly.
There are many, many eyes on our election system, and adversaries don't really like that. They look for soft targets, things that people aren't really looking at. And so I feel that for those reasons, there really won't be much of a security event, if any, around the 2024 elections.
But there is another kind of threat that voters should be aware of, voting advocates say.
There is mis- and disinformation being sowed about the voting systems and how things work to undermine trust in our democratic process. I think that is actually a much bigger concern.
American voters are being encouraged to remain vigilant, volunteer as poll workers or observers themselves, and reach out to authorities if they have questions about how the election process works. Veronica Valeras Iglesias, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
In local news, opposition leader Tendai Biti was today fined $300 US or 6 months in jail after he was found guilty yesterday of assaulting a Russian businesswoman, Tatiana Aleshina. His lawyer, Alec Mushadehama, speaks to journalists in Harare.
Today we submitted our factors in mitigation, basically where we were saying far from what has been portrayed about Tendai by the state and the complainant. Tendai Biti is basically a good man. That is the long and short of what I was saying. The state was also trying to say Tendai Biti needs to be punished more than is necessary. So at the end of it all, the magistrate then sentenced Tendai Biti to pay a fine of $300 in default of payment, 6 months imprisonment. And in addition, the magistrate has also imposed a 6 months imprisonment suspended for 5 years on conditions of good behavior. So that is basically what has happened in court. But going forward, I can assure you that we are going to appeal both the conviction and sentence. I already have the draft of appeal, and by tomorrow, this time the appeal will have filed. I must indicate, of course, that both myself and Tendai Biti are extremely disappointed with the conviction, but not surprised that it has come to that. And this is why we are going to appeal to the High Court. So that is the situation so far. Thank you very much.
That was former Finance Minister Tendai Biti's lawyer, Alek Amuchadeama, speaking to Studio 7 in Harare. The Russian Tatiana Aleshina tells Studio 7 that she feels justice has been served.
Justice has been revealed, and that is a positive. It gives us hope to Zimbabwean women. Zimbabwe got justice. Even if it takes long term, 4 years, but I learn a lot. I realize if we women cannot stand up for our rights, justice will be not revealed. But I believe Zimbabwe got the future, and I'm happy to say this victory, what happened today, it's not my victory, it's a Zimbabwean woman victory. Because today, I want to encourage all Zimbabwean people, especially women who've been abused, doesn't matter verbally or physically, but they can stand up for their rights. And I nothing to do personally with Tendai Biti or anyone, but let him learn the good lessons. Respect women, and respect not only women, everyone in this country. That's my comments. Yeah, thank you so much.
That was Tatiana Aleshina speaking to Studio 7 in Harare. Please stay tuned as we take a brief break.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
For those that have just joined us, please note that we are streaming live on our Facebook pages, VOA Shona, VOA Studio 7, and VOA Ndebele. We are also live on YouTube, VOA Zimbabwe. Today, we are talking about the state of education in Zimbabwe at a time when the Ministry of Primary and Secondary Education has started engaging teachers, unions, lecturers, and others at a time when they are threatening to go on strike tomorrow over low salaries, while the government says it is addressing their concerns. To discuss this issue, we are joined on the phone by Alderman Moses Mbimbi, founder and executive director of Friends of Education Africa, ZINASU, outgoing NASTA chair Chris Fundirwa, and ZANU-PF information officer Francis Mufambi. Welcome to Live Talk, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
I'll
start with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll start with you, Mr. Mbembe. Looking at the education sector in Zimbabwe, what is the state of the sector in Zimbabwe? Where are we right now?
Okay, thank you very much for the question. I think your question needs to be approached from different angles, but angle number one, which I would be more comfortable discussing with you, to say the education sector, like any other key development sector in the country, is a developing sector with the challenges and opportunities that are also bedeviling the same each and every other sector. But most importantly to note is that the challenges, some of them have been perpetuated over a long period of time, and they are still work in progress, as well as also some of the opportunities that have been presented in the education sector have also opened a lot of doors for the sector, for stakeholders, students, as well as also even other partners. And the ministry at large also has got a lot of opportunities and challenges that it has managed to have access to as a result of some of the key developments that have taken place in the sector.
Thank you. Ngibuye kuwe laphana Fundirwa. Sikhangela uhlangothi lwezemfundo eZimbabwe, wena ulubona njani? Singathi kumi njani eZimbabwe?
Sikhangele isimo semfundo yalapha eZimbabwe. Ngesikhiwa ngingathi mina sine crisis enkulu, ngoba kunje so ngikhuluma ngimele ama-tertiary students. We are seeing a lot of tertiary students esuka lapha eZimbabwe ngesiyakhetha uyafundela kwamanye amazwe. And if one of them trying to take away from our money, imagine this thing that is bad. Could not see me. I'm money, I'm a student, I was bad. I could again medicine, it's Zambia, Abani, Abai, Cyprus, Abani, Abai, and I think Konoko is getting so die. In Fundo, a lot is not really satisfactory. It's very costly, and the technology and exposure that the students get compared to intengo yefees zangkhona, hayi awuhambelani kuleso.
Hayi, ngiyabonga kakhulu. Mr. Mfambi, welcome to the program. Looking at the state of education in Zimbabwe, we've heard Fundira speaking there. Some of the challenges that he's saying are prevailing in Zimbabwe, issues around the cost, the exposure, where he's saying there's a large number of students who are now preferring to get tertiary education out of the country. What's your take on all these issues?
Okay, thank you very much. To begin with, I think I will take you historically to say Zimbabwe's education system at independence became one of the best in the region, and we still have this really comparative advantage. And this explains why Zimbabweans still have an advantage in terms of the labor force regionally and globally. But we can't say this without actually mentioning that there are challenges that are coming due to different factors, some external, some internal. External, including sanctions, for instance. I think we are aware that a report by Ms. Elena Duhan actually highlighted that the sanctions are making it hard for Zimbabweans to enjoy their social, economic, and cultural rights. And education is part of these, which is being affected by such. But however, the government, especially the Second Republic, since 2017 has made a raft of policies that are very impactful and that are changing the whole outlook of the education system. I'll actually start maybe by mentioning how we inherited an old curriculum, and we actually introduced a curriculum reorientation which allows us to deliver a proper education that is in tandem with our industry. I can even mention the problem that we had, which is the skills gap. And to address the skills gap, the secondary Republic, which is to introduce a two-pronged solution whereby we had a skills audit to understand the skills gap that we had in our education system. And this skills audit will then allow us to have skills development, to allow us to know which areas do we have to take seriously. Then, thirdly, and not less importantly, is the budgetary constraints that we face. But look at it, what did the Second Republic do? The Second Republic has increased the budget allocation and has even made it sure that we align with international rules when it comes to budgetary allocation. I will mention at least two of these, the Education for All, initiative, which was initiated by UNESCO, which advocates that a country should have between 4 to 6% of the GDP in education. But Zimbabwe, you can see that since independence, we have been giving between 17.5 to 20% of the government expenditure, which is actually in line with what should be done. And I can tell you, with this goal, we are also managing to work towards the SDG number 4, which focuses on ensuring inclusive and equitable quality of education. And to show that we are serious about this, the government has introduced the Education 5.0, which focuses on research, innovation, and industrialization. And as I speak today, it is common cause that we have innovation hubs at all, at the majority of the state-owned universities, which will allow our youth to make sure that they can research, they can innovate, and they can industrialize or bring their forth their ideas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mfambi. There's a caller on the line. Hello, Lingenile Kuhlelo, salibonani.
Yebo, ninjani.
Hayi, siyaphila, linjani. Lisixhuma lingaphi lapha?
Sixhumana nje nge-South Africa Women.
Hayi, siyabonga kakhulu. Lingaphosa lapha umbiko wenu. Libona njani udaba lwemfundo eZimbabwe lapha?
Udaba lwemfundo yasekhaya linihle kakhulu mpolisa ngenxa yokuthi abafundi ukuthi abafundi singane ikolo labo liphansi kakhulu ma ngabe sibheka kakhulu i-cost of living bese kuyothi nabafundi kuba nzima kakhulu ukubana bekhokhele i-school fees ngoba kuyimanje i-fees ayikho ezweni lethu lomzansi.
Hayi, siyabonga kakhulu baba ngombi kwenu lowo. Tidzoke kwa muri vambimbi tichitarisa pamambotaura kuti pane maopportunities aripo anogona kunge achibatsira pakusimudzira nekuvandudza dzidzo muZimbabwe. Tichitarisa kuti pane matambudziko akawanda ataurwa pano. Ndeipi mikana ya munoona iripo yekuti kunge kuchivandudzwa dzidzo muZimbabwe?
Ndingangotanga nekuti vanhu vanotarisa machallenges nguva zhinji and they look at them as the problems asi tati machallenges. Saka izvozvo zvinozvoga zvinoratidza kuti kana tichitarisa nyika yeZimbabwe tichitarisa riri nyaya dzeeducation, chekutanga tinofanira kuongorora toona kuti kana zvikoro zvedu zvaimhenge zvichiti waitiwana chikoro pano chiri cheprimary school wozowana chimwe chikoro chesecondary school chiri 20 kilometers away, iyoyoyo ichallenge iriko kuvana. Asi hurumende yakaita basa guru zvikuru sei Second Republic yakatanga kumeka sure kuti at least within a 5 kilometer radius pafana kunge pane chikoro. So as far as infrastructure development in line with the education sector is concerned, ipapo hurumende yakatinoti we need to commend the great work that government is doing. Touya also panyaya yeaccess, so nyaya yeinfrastructure and access to education ipapo pane basa guru riri kubatwa nehurumende. Ndomimwe mikana yacho iripo yekuti vana pavaiperera magrade 7 nyengo vapasa nyengo vane chido chokuendera mberi nechikoro kwaishayiwa kupedyo pokuenda vachinoita chii form 1. Izvozvo zvoga zvinoratidza kuti pane basa guru riri kubatwa kunzvimbo dzakasiyana munharaunda yeZimbabwe. Tichitarisa zvekare pane nyaya dzecost of education, cost of education muZimbabwe hainyanyodhuri zvakanyanya. Asi maybe tinofana kuzotarisa visa fee in terms of there's an element where at some point in time or even nowadays is a bit different. Panaka element ke RTGS factor and USD factor in terms of my salaries and my allowance that people get my various employment kwavanenge vari. But whether uchita business and as long as kwanza kubata USD tichipega at USD value, we can't say education is unaffordable in Zimbabwe. That's not true. But what we need to look at is a country like Zimbabwe subjected or sanctioned by other countries, and you notice that it is bedeviled with a lot of economic challenges. These are challenges affecting the country, not specifically the targeting the sector only. But what then happens is the sector is at the receiving end, because if parents are not having enough economic opportunities, they struggle to get fees, and mostly they have challenges in terms of having their kids not going to school. But also when you talk of maybe on the teaching staff, which is the side of the skill transfer part of it, where the teaching staff have also to be satisfied in terms of how much they earn and also so that they're able also to stay on their jobs. We've got a big challenge where, as a developing economy, there I would say there's a lot of work that government needs to do. It's not only an issue of engaging the sector and negotiating for salary increase, but we need to innovate around how best can we be competitive in terms of remunerating our teaching staff. This is what I see, because private schools are currently doing very well in terms of remunerating their teachers and their teaching staff, and they are actually attracting a lot of teachers from government schools to their private institutions. And because they are running them as a business, therefore, they somehow you can see that there's a level of sustainability in the running of the school business at the private institution, which is opposed to what we are seeing at a government institution. That is where I see some challenges, where opportunities need to be explored as far as opportunities to fund. Particularly on that. So we've got school development associations, we've got development partners. A school as a business cannot run without partners, cannot run without also investment that is put directly into the school. If we only rely on school fees, then we've got challenges. So these are things that I see, but the opportunities that are naturally available on the ground
come
out of some of the things that we can convert into value. For technical training institutions, the whole idea is to innovate, produce products that you take to the market. If you currently produce products that you can take to the market and sell, and from there...
Thank you, Mr. Mbimbi. Now, on the cost, when you're saying it's affordable, muruku reva muchi tarisa dzimwe nyika dzatakavakidzana nadzo kana kuti muruku tarisa mari dziri kutambirwa nevanhu nekuti... takambotaura zvekare nevadzidzisi vachiti ivo mari dzekuchikoro dzakawandisa nekuda kwekuti mari dzavari kutambira idzo havazogone kuendesa vana vavo kuchikoro. Tichitarisa zvikuru kumayunivhesiti kuti vanoti mudzidzisi mumwe chete akaita vana vaviri kana vatatu haachagone kuti avaendese kuyunivhesiti. Izvi munozviona sei?
Matara zvakanaka, and you are clearly biased towards a teacher who is also a parent. Those are two different positions. If you are a teacher and you are a parent, you rely on your salary to take your kids to school. And we are saying in a country like Zimbabwe, where a teacher is a civil servant, like someone who is in the military, in the police service, in the prison, in the correctional services, in the national party or anywhere, you are part and parcel of the civil service. Those people earn an equal amount of money. So it's not something that is only relative to the teaching staff. So we may not need to discuss this point, being biased to a teacher. Though myself, having been a chairman for a school development association, I've been faced with such challenges in terms of teachers trying to go on strike because I cannot afford to take my child to school, particularly at the school where they are teaching. The issue of affordability is you can't expect to take your kid to a boarding school when you are merely just as you said, relying on your salary that you get, considering the fact that the payment schedule for a civil servant does not allow for that. So affordability is relative to interest and priorities. You can't expect to watch...
Tinotenda vabimbi regai nguva yacho iri kuti mhanyei. Regai tinzwe kuti fundirwai ari kuzviona sei sezvo ari umwe wevadzidzi vari kumayunivhesiti. Ukuvona njani loku fundirwa okulinywa nguvava umbimbi?
Iqiniso yokuthi isibili imfundo yalapha iyadura. Ngabe imfundo yalapha infrastructure ekuzikolo lezi ngabe ihambelana lenkingo ze-fees, then it would mean ukuthi the fees are worth it, expensive as they are. But isikhayela khonokho esikushoyo ukuthi abazali imali abazikholayo zivele ezincane. Then i-fees yena isinde ibe nkulu. But ukufunda futhi esikolo lesiyana uthola ukuthi ama-lecturers are not earning enough. Therefore, they are attending one or two lectures per week. So at the end of the day, ubhatala imali eningi and nxa uqeda isikolo sangkhona uyabungakwazi lutho. Uyabona? And ama-companies they are now saying they want people with 4 years, 5 years experience. Why? Because they know ukuthi ama-graduates, the graduates knowing nothing. Why do they know nothing? Because the quality of education that they are getting is not enough compared to the fees that they are paying.
Thank you. Mr. Mfambi, I'll come back to you. Briefly, what's your take looking at the unemployment rates in Zimbabwe? Does that reflect on our education system or it's a different issue altogether?
Okay, I needed to comment on the issue of the remuneration and those things that you have raised. I think the government and the Zambia government, to mention, has been very clear and has been listening to its employees and has always tried to implement pecuniary and non-pecuniary rewards to its employees. We can't then say employees should be satisfied with what is being offered by the government, but we are always in continuous discussions with them to see how we can better the terms of conditions of service. However, this is looking at the teacher or the service provider. But on the learner side, the government has been doing a lot of things, including subsidizing education. I think if you saw the charts of how the exam fees are going to be paid, you can see that in government schools, the government will subsidize the majority share of the amount that is being charged by the And equally, you've seen that the government is trying to strike a balance between the rural learner and the urban learner. And how are they doing this? The previous speaker spoke about how we have managed to create schools that are 5 kilometers radius from each other. And actually, from 2017, there are more than 2,000 schools that have been built by the Zanu-PF government, owing to the devolution funds. And on top of that, they've made sure that information centers that bring technology to computers.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mufambi. Unfortunately, our time has run out, but let me take this opportunity to thank you all for coming on the program. And that brings us to the end of our show. Signing off in Washington, I am Thabo Kancube.